Our regular 5 p.m. news broadcast is preempted for an audio recording of the Italian television special Fallujah, The Hidden Massacre. This program, originally aired earlier this week on Raimundo, exposes the United States military's use of chemical weapons on the civilian population during the destruction of the town of Fallujah in Iraq 1 year ago. At 5:30, hear Counterspin. At 6 p.m., it's the feminist radio show Bread and Roses with a Women on War special. All that tonight on KBOO.
You've been listening to specials for International Women's Day. Up next, an interview with Margaret Cho by Maria Lowe.
I don't think that there's any role models that I had when I was growing up, anybody that I could look to and say, wow, I want to be like that. You know, I never saw anybody. You know, the only thing that's sort of Asian that was like that was Hello Kitty. I don't want to model myself after Hello Kitty. It's, she has no mouth. She cannot even say hi back to you after you say, Hello, Kitty.
In the years since Margaret Cho first started doing stand-up comedy at age 16, she herself has become a role model for many. And she has done so on her own terms. In an industry with very narrow options and roles for Asian American women, she has managed to defy stereotypes and carve a space with her defiant, raw, and incisive humor. Much of her comedy draws on her personal experiences, detailing her life as a self-proclaimed proud fag hag, her sexuality, her relationship to her mother, and her struggle with racism, substance abuse, and eating disorders. In doing so, her work has given voice and validity to experiences that do not conform to straight white norms. Patty Sakurai, APA Compass Collective member, talks about the impact of Margaret Cho's work.
Having grown up with a complete absence of API women except for in these very demeaning, stereotypical roles, seeing Margaret Cho on stage, seeing an API woman, it was just, there's something just about the image that was just very empowering and exciting. It's hard, I think, if you're a person of color in this country, not to feel isolated in terms of how alienated you might feel by American culture or what happens in the U.S. when the media and the culture doesn't reflect your experience, doesn't even acknowledge that you exist. And then to have this image and this person up there very clearly carving out a space and asserting some space for herself and some voice.
What is particularly inspiring about Cho is her unapologetic stance, that she is not afraid to speak out, when for many of us, living under a white, heterosexist society, it is safer to keep quiet. Liz Rogers, another collective member, has this to say.
For me, like, you have to be really conscious of who's around you and what things that you say and how you present them. And I think to see someone, an Asian American female, to come out and say a lot of things that I completely agree with, but to be very unapologetic about it and just say, this is how I feel, and you either take it or you don't, for me is kind of like a relief that someone is saying these things and not be apologetic about it and being empowered by it.
Cho's work is not without controversy, however.
I can't remember which of the shows, going into a theater and sitting with a large group of friends and being in the front row, and we're laughing, and, you know, in terms of recognition and really connecting with some of the things she was saying, and there's a certain tension in the back of the room with the other audience members, which was really pretty interesting. And if anything, to me, it validates that she's onto something. I think certain things should be uncomfortable. And there is a difference in terms of where you yourself are situated in your position on how you're going to react to certain things that are said, because there's a way in which her work implicates all of U.S. society. And so depending on where you are in those implications, some things will strike you as more funny than other things. If anything, it was very validating to know that there was some discomfort around some of the things she was saying, because I think bottom line is she was hitting some truths around race, gender, sexuality, so forth in our country, and that's not a necessarily comfortable conversation. And yeah, I really appreciate comedy as a vehicle, just because there's a way in which you can use humor to launch a critique that is incredibly effective.
When Cho's show, All American Girl, aired in 1994, it was hailed as the first Asian-American sitcom on primetime TV. However, it lasted only a season. The network's reluctance to give Cho more creative control resulted in a show that was poorly written and bore little resemblance to the comedy that earned Cho the 1994 American Comedy Award for Best Female Stand-Up. Cho reemerged in 1999 with her wildly successful one-woman off-Broadway show, I'm the One I Want, which was later made into a concert film and a book of the same name. Since then, she has performed to sell-out crowds across the country and from shows such as Notorious C.H.O., Revolution, State of Emergency, and Assassin, her work has become progressively more and more political, tackling issues such as racism, sexism, and homophobia.
I think it's been interesting because, you know, I have had some criticisms of her not addressing so much the Asian American issues, but I think having read her book and then maybe doing the interview gave me a little more perspective as to maybe why it wasn't maybe a safe place for her to do earlier on in her career because of the struggles with her show. And so I think now I'm definitely more appreciative of kind of strategic timing, you know, of speaking out. You know, one thing that I do appreciate is that she's brought in Asian American community into the LGBTQ issues as well, because I think that often is a piece that gets left out quite a bit. We're considered two very distinct communities without the consideration that the communities will overlap.
Recently, on tour promoting her new book titled I Have Chosen to Stay and Fight, Cho dropped by KABU Studios to speak to APA Compass about her work and her perspectives on Asian America.
Thank you so much for coming in and being on APA Compass. We really just love your work and are really grateful that, you know, you're out there.
Thank you
so
very much.
Just, yeah, really appreciative of the work you've been doing.
Oh, thank you. That's great.
Yeah. I think most of us have carried the burden of having an assumed representation of all Asian Americans. You being who you are and having such a broad platform and spotlight, and obviously that representation is assumed on you. How does that affect basically what you say and how you say it, knowing that you're automatically representing a whole group of people?
Well, it's really weird. What's strange is, like, I've noticed it now more than ever, and on this book tour especially, like, I go to these different shows to promote my book, and the host is very nice, and he says, well, I love the book, and just tell me, what was it like to make Charlie's Angels? It's like they're trying to be funny, and I get that. It's like, okay, that's funny, and it's fine that you're trying to be friendly. And I just have to be really good-natured about it because I don't want to go, that's really racist, you know, because I want to be friendly toward these people because they're not coming at me with this anger or, like, rage or anything like that. It's just really they're just, you know, they don't know any better. But I'm sick of people not knowing any better, you know. I'm really sick of that. And because, you know, you would never, ever try to confuse, say, Little Kim and Foxy Brown. You know, God help you if you ever did.
Yeah.
And there is this permission, I think our society has, to trivialize the Asian American experience. And so, to confuse me with Lucy Liu, and because it takes so much for an Asian American to get to where we are in entertainment, it really just discredits all the work we have done to get here, you know, by confusing us. And it's, I see how people try to be funny and cute, but it's not funny. But there's this weird permission that people have to make jokes about Asian Americans. Asian Americans somehow retain a kind of foreigner identity, and I'm not sure why. And it doesn't work, that excuse, like, well, we look different. That doesn't work on me anymore, because that's not enough. You know, it's not enough to make it okay.
And maybe just to follow up on that, the assumption that Asian Americans are also passive, quiet, and for Asian American women in particular, the kind of geisha subservient, you know, docile, passive stereotype that for Asian American women in particular, I think sometimes it's hard to fight against all those kinds of expectations. So what inspires you to get up in the morning and say these things that sometimes people are not really interested or ready to hear?
Well, in dealing with that invisibility, what motivates me is speaking with other people who also recognize that invisibility in their lives. And this extends past Asian American and also ethnic minority experience. It goes into the gay and lesbian community, and it goes even further. Like, it's a very strange thing. Invisibility is so hard to explain also to people who are not invisible and have never had that experience and don't know what you would be talking about at all. And they say, well, why are you so upset? Jackie Chan is a really big star. And it's good that I chose the field that I'm in. It's just stand-up comedy because it's a place where anger is really allowed, that anger and this aggressive voice is actually welcomed, and it's a better format for that. And it's a good place for me to be as an artist because it suits my temperament and my situation. Mm-hmm. But it can be really trying. So I guess what keeps me going is just that communication with other people who experience the same thing. And also the amazement that I feel whenever I do bring this up with, say, a straight white male person who may be speaking with me, and they have the most amazing answers that I can't believe. Like, I was talking to this guy about it, you know, on a radio show, and then he just said, well, don't you think Asians just don't want to be in entertainment? And he felt completely comfortable saying that, and nobody around has ever even blinked like that was a racist statement, or even if it was insensitive at all. He just was making an observation, as a straight white man would. I just don't think Asians want to do this, because I don't see any. Mm-hmm. And they look at the world in a very different way than we do. I mean, I talk about in my book why I would really love to be a straight white man just for a weekend, because I think it would be so relaxing. Because they think so simply about things. They don't have to really have all of that cultural baggage and the racial baggage that we do. So it's very odd where you realize that, oh my God, the world that I live in is so ignorant. And they don't even care that they're ignorant. They don't even want it to be pointed out. They don't care to learn it because they just never, ever thought anything they did was wrong. I think sometimes I get very tired of it. I mean, I get so sick of trying to teach white people about racism. I think, why is this my job? If our schools did a better job, if we had more of an understanding of other cultures, if we didn't deny so much of our own racist history, then I think things would be better. And why am I left to do this job that should have been done by our teachers in our schools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What led you to do stand-up comedy?
It was something that made sense to me because I knew that I could do it. I knew that I had that ability within me to be a good performer and do stand-up comedy. I don't know how I knew, but I knew. Because I didn't have the kind of personality for it, but I was a very shy kid. Yet I really didn't want the life that my parents really had planned for me, and that would be go to an Ivy League school and pursue a career that was completely empty, which is what a lot of my peers are going through now. You know, they're in their mid-30s, and they listen to their parents all this time, and now they're just lost because they don't want to be the lawyer, doctor, whatever. They don't want all the things that their parents kind of forced them to do, and so that now they're in this midlife crisis and very unhappy, whereas I'm very, very satisfied with everything. So I'm glad that I made that choice. I was independent enough as a teenager to do that. In the end, you know, my parents are very happy for me now. They're really grateful for my headstrong personality and my way, but, you know, it was probably pretty difficult when I was going through it, like when they were really angry at me, you know, for doing comedy and talking about them. And you know.
How would you describe your relationship with the Asian American community?
Well, my relationship with the Asian American community is interesting. It's changed. When I first came about doing my sitcom All American Girl, I think that my appearance was very shocking to people because here the network was trying to appeal to the Asian American community and say, here's this young girl that's doing this and she's like one of you. And yet I think that I was really rejected a lot by older Asian Americans because the sudden appearance of this, like, okay, here's somebody that's supposed to be representing you was just so unwarranted and uninvited and kind of, you know, very shocking. And so people got caught up in very specific things. Like when I did television, there was a big thing on emphasis on, well, these are not Korean actors portraying Koreans. And I don't think that's that important, but some people think that's very, very important because they have a lot of incredible tension between, say, Koreans and Japanese, mm-hmm. Japanese and Chinese, all this very historical rage against each other that brought about by all the different wars and these different rivalries and everything. And so, but I think more along the lines of Asian Americans we're all here. And so we have to find unity here in order to be one minority here instead of a bunch of different little ones. And so I never found that particularly that important. And, you know, you look at white actors who are able to cross ethnic lines, national lines all the time. And nobody even mentions it. Nobody cares. But we're held up to a different standard because of our invisibility. I think that was the main complaint about the television show that I did, is that the
the actors who were portraying Koreans, then they were not Korean. I think what the problem was doing television was that because the network was so concerned about the fact that this was an Asian American family, and they thought that the Asian faces on a show would be so shocking to middle America, that they had to make the writing, the content of the show, as mediocre as possible. So the show didn't work because we weren't allowed to be ourselves at all, and we were so focused on this idea of ethnicity and defining that ethnicity that it was a failure, because you can't really define ethnicity and have that be the only trait of somebody's personality. But I think that's what has happened a lot to Asian actors in the mainstream. You know, if you watch a television show and there's an Asian actor featured in it, most likely their ethnicity has so much to do with their storyline and their what they're doing and their role in the show, that they just become just a race, not a character with feelings that have, they have interaction. I mean, like, okay, I like the show Lost a lot. And I like the Korean people on that show because I think they're very real. Mm-hmm. I think they're very, very authentic. However, their purpose on that show is really just to be Korean. Most of the characters that you see on anything, in any film or television show, their ethnicity has so much to do with them that why don't you just have like a map of the country or something? Because it's a very... I think insulting way to deal with trying to make the television world or the film world look like the world as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, but getting back to my relationship with the Korean community, it was very difficult for me in the beginning because I had to kind of negotiate through all of these feelings people had. And nowadays, my relationship is actually very, very interesting. I mean, it's great because a lot of kids grew up with me and watched me on television and were very excited because I was like talking and relating an experience that they had, that they understood. Like when I talked about my mom, they had the same mom. You know, they had the same kind of incredible like embarrassment at having this very foreign mother and having to deal with that. And, you know, talking about that was very cathartic for them, too. So we have the whole generation that's grown up with my work. And so I have a great amount of respect there, too. And I think that the older generation is also catching up with that and sort of realizing that, you know, my impact on the community has been pretty big. And so it's great now, you know, I've reached this sort of elder statesman status. But it's a cool thing. It was very hard in the beginning. And I think it was harder because I'm a woman. They didn't see a man up there going first. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have like some pro golfer or whatever, I'm sure, which they would really love. But it was just me. So, you know, I was not the best representation of their culture. So that was then. But now things are much improved.
And maybe just to extend your point about how in the media or even in general, there's the expectation that if you're a person of color, all your experiences get filtered through, say, your race. Mm-hmm. And that's the main storyline. That's how you interact with people, and that's the only way you live. Mm-hmm. And your work deals with sexuality, queer issues, and identity is a really large part of your work. How do you see these issues intersecting, and also how does that inform your work?
Well, I do a lot of work with the gay community and work on marriage equality. And one of the big questions that people always ask, they will say, well, you're married. And I say, well, yeah, I'm married. And I've been married for 3 years, and I'm very happy in my marriage. And I'm married to a man, and it's a very conventional marriage. It's very kind of traditional and tidy, and it is what it is. And people say, well, why are you such an advocate of gay marriage? Why are you so concerned about gay rights if you're not actually, like, gay? And today, nobody would question the white students who went to Mississippi to march with Martin Luther King. Nobody would question their motives. Nobody would say anything that think that was an odd thing at all. But people do treat me like that. That's really the strangest thing in the world. And so I think that really says something, that we have this great divide in terms of what really constitutes minority status. And mm-hmm. my feeling is that minority status really is something that can be reversed with that unity. But that unity is very hard to create, especially with the kind of animosity that exists between certain ethnic cultures and like the gay community, and then certain ethnic cultures within themselves and amongst themselves, like, you know, as we said a little earlier, from between like Asian communities that are divided by their nationality, that there are those problems. But the deeper problems that exist, there's the African-American Korean conflict that seems to be this constant in many cities, and then there's the African-American community versus the gay community, which is also a big problem too. There's a lot of friction there. So
it's my understanding that, that if we found a way to actually communicate with each other and really let go of some of the tension and the friction between us, we would actually be a much more powerful political force. But the way to that, I don't know. I mean, it's so incredibly difficult to do that, to somehow reconcile these different communities. And, you know, I myself don't have a grand vision of how that will happen or when that will happen. But, you know, I try to do what I can through my work, which I think is the best that I can do, and just informing people and utilizing humor to do so. So I'm sort of disarming them while trying to show them this is a better way. And but, you know, it's a really difficult thing. You know, people really don't want to let go of their own prejudices, even though they have so much prejudice against them. And that's very frustrating, because when you're seeing so much ignorance, then we could get over that. We could actually somehow rise above that if we were more connected to each other. But it's very frustrating.
You're listening to an interview with Margaret Cho here on APA Compass.
You know what, Margaret? I think the Asian thing puts people off.
What the thing is the Asian thing? Like it's some gimmick that I pull out of my ass every couple of years to jazz up my career. It's like, oh, oh, hey, ah. Do the Asian thing, all right, hey, is that ice? Hi-ya! You know you gotta chink it up sometimes, you know? You gotta get chinky with it.
What's your response to criticism around your material not addressing Asian American issues enough?
Well, I feel like whenever I'm doing something as a performer, I'm invested in what it is. And so I don't really go for things like, okay, is this going to serve my Asian Americanness more? You know, it's just what I happen to be interested in. You know, right now I'm very interested in Asian American issues because I'm seeing this very frustrating rise in casual racism, which casual racism is that kind of comment like, oh, you're great in Charlie's Angels, or, you know, that kind of casual racism that is so just trips slightly off the tongue that nobody thinks about. That is so frustrating to me that I wanted to just get into it and really talk about it. And so this is a very Asian American issue that I want to deal with now. And, you know, when it comes to criticism of any kind, I'm pretty thick-skinned about most of it because I've had so much of it in my career that it all seems meaningless because so much criticism criticizes different things. So how could I listen to one and not listen to the other? Or, you know, so I have to discount all of it because none of it really is valid, because there's somebody else with just as valid a point that is tearing down another critic. So it doesn't really make sense to me to get, you know, upset about it or change the course of my work because of it. But, you know, Asian American issues like are so interesting to me now just because of this rise of very racist attitudes that nobody thinks are so bad.
Mm-hmm. Your point about casual racism, I think, hits the nail on the head, because how we think about racism is sort of defined in terms of either violence or in terms of outright discrimination, that sort of assumptions about other people, et cetera, the things that sort of roll off the tongue.
Yeah. Making our experience is somewhat diminished or trivialized. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what's really infuriating, too. Like, again, like going back to this book tour, there's a line in the book that says, I'm just so sick of hearing from these ancient white guys. And I went on the show, and this talk show host was really angry. Not angry, but he was like, he said, well, I have a lot more to say. And I said, well, that's fine. You can say it, but can't you allow other people a voice? Why do you have to fill up all of the airways? And he was just really offended by that, because he couldn't imagine why I would want to shut up the ancient white guys, why I would want and through doing that, he's really trivializing my experience and trivializing my frustration at this. And when I go on to these shows and I talk about racism and everything, they just are very like, okay, you're all right, little lady, don't get all upset about it, it's all right, you know. And it's a very weird thing, and then they just want to talk about what Asian girls are really hot. That's what they think they want. They're talking about race. Like, some of these people, they think they're talking about race when they say Biling is really hot. And I'm like, that is true, but it has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. Well, you wanted to talk about race, right?
Well, I love Japanese girls. They're the most sexy. So I think that trivialization is like the most frustrating thing and what I always want to kind of get into.
Yeah. And actually, that reminds me of this idea of racist love, that these are not negative descriptions of Asian Americans. They're positive. I mean, Asian American women, they're sexy. That's a compliment.
I know.
Yeah. And I don't see that how that could be incredibly damaging.
Yeah. And that it can diminish our role in society. So that's all we provide, is that we are the sexual fetish. I mean, okay, that's fine, but then if we had a complete image, if we had a complete identity within that, that would be totally okay. But there's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's very demeaning. Then if we don't identify as sexy women, then are we without any value at all to the society? It's almost like that's what it's saying. Like, we shouldn't even bother to exist. And it's, there's a lot of controversy right now over the Harajuku girls.
Oh, yes, I saw it.
People are very upset about them, and then people really like them, too. And I can't really decide, because I am so thrilled whenever I see Asian people that I'm like, oh, I don't care. I love them, you know? You know, I'm trying to, like, see Asian people as much as I can in the media. I don't want them to go away. I don't want them to be vanished because people are angry. I want them to exist because they are there, you know, and they represent us. No matter how distorted and wrong it is, it's still some kind of existence. And that is a joyful one for me. And, you know, it's exciting. I think one of them is actually American. And she's great, you know, because she's just going along with it. So I don't want to argue it down, because I don't want them to go away. But they make Asian people really mad. You know, they people get really upset about them. And I understand that completely. But they remind me a little bit of myself, because people used to get really mad at me the same way. So it's a kind of like return to that a little bit. You know, it's a complicated thing. You know, when that's all there is, it's a sad state of affairs. And it's sad to me, too, that whenever, you know, we're so incredibly starved for any kind of representation, that whenever one comes along, we're just ready to rip it apart. You know, we're ready to just and fight amongst ourselves about it. And that's really sad. You know, it's really sad that we don't have more representation.
It's your show, All American Girl 1994. Do you think anything has gotten better, or anything has changed as far as Asian Pacific Americans in the media?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that, well, yeah, there's these people on Lost. There's Sandra Oh, who I like very much, and there's Bobby Lee, who I also really love, and John Cho, who's amazing, and there's a few people, but that's really it. You know, you have so few, and it's just astounding. You know, it's been over 10 years since we did that television show, and there's just still nothing. So I've actually gone back, and I'm going to develop a television show now to do again, because I realized that it's not going to happen again unless I do it again. So I want to create another television show, and I'll actually be playing a different role this time. I'll be playing my mother on the show, which I'm really excited about, because I think it's really great, and I think it'll be really fun. And, you know, I'm much more confident going back into television, because I'll be producing and writing on the show. So it's got a lot more of a chance of surviving, because I'll be driving the whole thing. And, you know, I have a lot of support at the network and a lot of confidence about it now, which I didn't have when I was going into this initially. And also a lot more knowledge about how race really affects the minds of people who are, I just need to like tone that down, you know, that they have to like focus so much on the racial identity. But so since I have more of a handle on it, I feel like it's going to be really, really much easier.
Well, when is that going to come out?
That'll be next fall.
I have another question. You've done a lot of interviews. Is there something that you wish people would ask you that you feel like people have not?
I don't know what I wish people would ask me. I know that I have things that I wish people wouldn't ask me. Like, I, you know, wouldn't ask me about where I'm from. No, where are you really from? That is like the question that makes me so angry. You know, I've been really doing so much of this kind of stuff that people ask me pretty much anything, and they're pretty insensitive about things sometimes, but it's all right. It's not too bad. I'm used to it.
So you're still getting asked where you're from?
Yeah. I mean, you know, not every day, but a lot. You know, where are you from? No, where are you really from? It happens, and then nobody even bats an eye. I mean, people are just very curious, and I think it's the responsibility of our media to show that we're actually not foreign. We have a very irresponsible media, which really neglects this amazing cultural landscape that is America. We have this, you know, very, very narrow-minded, very monochromatic media that doesn't really see anything except white people. And so when we change that, it will get better. Those questions will kind of go away. Those questions that really frustrate Asian Americans.
And when do you think that will be?
I don't know. I hope sooner than later.
Yeah. Also, talking about the media, I mean, what is your perspective on Asian American filmmakers? There's starting to be some publicity around certain Asian American films. What do you think about the direction that it's going? And also, are you planning on doing anything like that down the road as well?
I'd love to. I mean, I'd love to do more films, and that's certainly something that's in my future. But, you know, my favorite film, like, of the last couple of years is probably Better Luck Tomorrow, mm-hmm. because it's such a beautiful film, and the acting is so great, and all those boys are just so beautiful, and just, it's just a beautiful feeling to be able to, like, see this kind of play out. It's like, wow, this is actually, like, our identity, and it's right there, and it's very real to me. It's very authentic and really magical. I really love John Cho. I mm-hmm. think he's really great, really, like, handsome, really elegant comedian, and also great dramatic actor, too, that kind of cuts through a lot of stereotypes and a lot of ignorance just by his presence. And so I really hope that he makes a lot more movies. The whole, like, state of Asian American film is really great, because here's this very, very frustrated community trying to tell their stories and learning how to. And that's all very exciting. So I think that there's going to be some really great things coming out.
I was talking to a friend, and we talked about how she wrote you a letter, and I guess the letter was about while she was in Indiana, she said that you were coming to visit, and her comment was that the Asian Americans in Indiana really needed someone like you. Does that make you feel some kind of sense of obligation or put some kind of pressure on you? Or
I guess that it might, but I've been under that pressure for a long time, so I'm used to it, and I would love to share that with other people. I wish that there were more Asian American voices out there. I mean, if not just politically, but, you know, maybe in my field in stand-up comedy, it would be great. But it's something that I have been waiting on for a long time. You know, I haven't seen it happen, but I really encourage it when it, hopefully it will.
Do you ever feel like, because you have been doing this for such a long time and you're one of the few people, that has it just been really isolating?
Yeah, it's isolating. I mean, it's certainly lonely, because I can't really, like, I can't say to my comedian friends, oh, this is so dumb, I can't, you know, can't really, because I can't really explain the idea of invisibility to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because white male straight comedians in this business don't really know why I would be upset about racial things. They don't really know. Like, they kind of go, well, you're not black, so, you know, you don't experience racism, really.
Yeah.
They don't. I mean, it's like the most ignorant population, so I can't really speak to my peers about what all this feels like. And it is very isolating. It's very lonely. But that's okay, you know, also, because I get to talk to people that really understand, like, you guys really understand what I mean, you know, and my audiences really understand what I mean. So in that, it's much less lonely.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had a really nice line about sort of how do you talk about invisibility, because it's so intangible. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I think that you're hitting on, for I think a lot of people, is that how do you talk about it if there's also sometimes no vocabulary? Mm-hmm. That if we don't have a kind of discussion and talk about these things, then how do other people have a voice and have a vocabulary or a forum to talk about those kinds of things?
Right. And to talk about it without allowing the dominant culture to trivialize it, mm-hmm, because right. You can't define it, really. It's hard to define or explain to them. I mean, you can define it amongst yourself, but it's hard to explain to them. So then they can easily trivialize it, and then it becomes so doubly frustrating. So it's a very, very difficult time to be a minority in this situation right now at this time, because it's so hard to define and hard to deal with that kind of invisibility.
I think a lot of us are really appreciative of the work that you're doing, because there hasn't been enough of a voice out there for Asian Americans, and also just what you're doing and the kind of courage it takes.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, it's why I do it. It's an incredible reward to whenever I feel that recognition. It's a great, great feeling. Then I realize that I'm not doing it for nothing, you know, that it actually is, like, I really am addressing something that's real, and it really has a great impact. So it's very powerful. So thank you.